Welcome to the Creative Shift Podcast. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today, I'm having a conversation with artist Jay Alders. I've featured him on the podcast in the past. He and I grew up together. We went to the same high school, and a bunch of years back, we reconnected after a really long gap. And I think that when we came together, it was this mutual fascination, not just of reconnecting with someone we knew from earlier, but we'd both pursued creative careers. We were both essentially running our own businesses. I was much more of the writer. He is, of course, much more of the artist. And I, as everything's been happening in the world and things are changing and writers and artists and creators are trying to navigate this, he and I started texting each other, and we were talking a bit about anxiety. The anxiety that a writer and an artist faces. The anxiety that an entrepreneur or anyone who runs any kind of business, even a teensy, tiny, itty-bitty, little, tiny business, the kind of anxiety that they live with day in and day out. And really quickly after we started texting about this, I was like, would you please come on the show and just have a really honest conversation with me about what does it mean to be self-employed, to be an entrepreneur, to be a creator? And what is it like to live with anxiety around the creative process, around money, around strategy, around all the different things that people who create deal with? Jay is really incredible. He shared so much in this conversation. And what I think is particularly interesting, and I think why I really wanted to chat with him, is it's not just that he is an artist and he has his own business and he's navigating it, but his wife has her own business, and both of them have this really strong, mission-driven sense of what they do and why. And they have three young kids at home, so they work from home. They just moved into a new house. And it was sort of the, you know, to me, one of these people that I knew, I was just so grateful that he could come on and really talk about what is that reality of having to shoulder it all? What is it like to navigate that? So this is my interview with Jay Alders. Hey, everyone. This is Dan Blank. Excited to be chatting again with Jay Alders. Welcome.
Well, thanks, Dan. I'm excited to have a chance to talk to you from week three of lockdown. It's nice to see like a friendly face.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. And, you know, we were texting and I really wanted to take this opportunity. You know, we've chatted before on the podcast, but to sort of talk about this thing that, I don't know, I obsess about, and I think most writers and artists and entrepreneurs obsess about, which is just total unrelenting anxiety.
Yes.
And it's funny, I heard something this morning that really helped frame it too. There's a YouTube channel I love called Andertons, and they're a music shop in England. And the owner, it's a third generation shop owner, and he did a 2.5 hour interview with this dad. So I'm listening to this every morning with breakfast. I love it. And it got to the point where it's like 1970, and the dad is telling, and I wrote this down. He said, when you're self-employed, there's a terrible inner fear all the time that someone is going to turn the tap off. He snaps his fingers. That business is just going to dry up. Business will stop because the business sucks up all your money. So you're constantly putting everything at risk. He gave the example that the first house he bought was immediately, at his words, unhocked to the bank to pay for the overdraft for the loan for the business.
Yeah.
That sort of summed up what I want to chat about today.
Well, yeah, that's great. I mean, anxiety is something I know really well.
Let's just frame this too, where like, because you and Chelsea, you have this really interesting life where you each have one or more businesses. Mm-hmm. You've had that in various different iterations for, I think, both of your whole careers almost. And in addition to that, you've got three young kids. So what's like the overview for someone who has no idea, you know, your place in this with entrepreneurship and business and creativity?
What's like my elevator pitch sort of thing?
Just sort of the situation that you and Chelsea wake up to each day.
Okay. Nowadays. So we have three young children. My daughter is 6 and a half. My twin boys just turned 5 like a week ago. My wife, Chelsea, is a birth doula. So that basically entails her not only supporting moms, but she's also growing or has been trying to grow the business into an agency. So making that into an agency model as opposed to her just showing up at a birth. In addition, she's an instructor and a coach for hypnobirthing as well as birth education. And she also, in 2019, started a nonprofit in order to help moms who don't necessarily have the means for postpartum care. So she started a postpartum organization called Roots and Wings, which is a way to kind of bring that to people. So that's her gist of her work. My work, as you know, as we've talked about, I'm an artist, primarily a painter is more or less what I'm known for. And I sell my prints mostly online, some shops around the world and some galleries, but mostly online. So my day that I wake up to nowadays is much different than it was a month ago, as it is for all of us. So I'm basically juggling, you know, the marketing and the admin and the fulfilling and all that kind of good stuff, as well as trying to keep the juices of creativity flowing, which, as you know, it can be challenging, especially when stress is sort of in the mix. And trying to be a homeschool teacher, and you know, Chelsea and I are 50-50 parents. We're both kind of like tag team parents throughout the day. So I feel like there's a lot going on for everyone. That's just sort of my version of what's going on.
Well, it's funny. You described it really well with her work, and I know it applies to your work as well, which is you as an artist, but even her, it wasn't just she's a doula. Right. It was she's a doula and... And right. She's a doula and there was four or five things attached to it. Right. And what's interesting too is, of course, her backstory is before that she had this other business. Before that she had this other business. Like,
right. Still does, actually. We still also co-own an international entertainment agency where we do primarily promotional events for large corporations.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then for you as an artist, what's sort of the mix with that? And I don't know whether you want to, I guess maybe focusing on like whether it's revenue channels or marketing channels or however you would even frame that.
As far as the entertainment company goes?
No, you general? As like the artist.
Oh, what specifically are you asking me about the art side of it?
Like just sort of like what you're juggling. Like with me, it's like, oh there's the client work, but then there's programs I run, but then there's the blog, then there's the podcast, and they all fall into a mix, but they're now five buckets that I have to really wake up every day and really kill it with.
So I have a lot of buckets. I actually just put one to the side and picked up another one. So I too have Chelsea and
spoken
I have
like
a
true entrepreneur.
Yeah, seriously. So we too have a podcast that we've sort of put to this on a shelf for a little bit. We kind of dabble with it here and there. I just released an episode, but that's sort of off on a shelf right now. And then as of like 2 weeks ago, I finally started a Patreon page, which is my newest bucket, which has been on my to-do list for at least 2.5 years, maybe about that. And so I finally sort of took the plunge and did that. I think the COVID-19 thing sort of pushed me over the edge of being like, you know, I need another stream of income. So that's the latest thing. In addition, I just recently painted two new paintings. I just actually finished one this morning, which is behind me. And so that has been really kind of fun and sort of an added pressure. Now I have this Patreon thing to sort of have this pressure of creating more and sharing more, which I kind of like having that pressure on me. So that's both, you know, an added pressure, but also sort of a motivator towards existing pressures of coming up with new artwork. I'm also still, believe it or not, I know it's hard to believe, I'm actually still working on finishing my book, which has been like 10 minutes here, 5 minutes there, skip a week, 5 minutes there. It's been a very hard project to finish, but I'm still working on the book. Still, you know, main admin and web guy. So all my web stuff is all me, the designing, the admin, the fulfilling of all my orders. So I have like several main giant buckets, which are projects. And then I also have the ongoing stuff of the busy work. And then I also, like you, have other hobbies that I really love to kind of partake in. I'm sitting next to my Les Paul, my new amp that I got like a month ago. Yay. And so, I have a lot of other things that I really just enjoy. I was telling you before we jumped on, I actually just got some some new arrows for my archery setup in the backyard. So I have a lot of hobbies and activities and a lot of stuff going on.
You mentioned that pressure can be something good and positive. When is that useful and why?
Yeah, so I feel like there's different varieties and flavors of pressure, right? So I feel like you have, you know, the pressure, you know, of the, holy crap, I have to pay the bills. I got to make sure that my kids are provided for, that sort of pressure. And then there's also the self-applied pressure that's more an implied pressure, where it's like me as an artist, I give myself these invisible, you know, projects and goals that don't necessarily have anything tied to them per se, more than just me wanting to push myself to the next level as an artist. So I have that sort of pressure. Then you have the sort of pressures of wanting to get to the end of the rainbow where the pot of gold is, right? And then lately I've noticed some pressures where, without mentioning specifics, there was a person in my life that sort of said something rather negative about me in a way, and it kind of has been sitting on my shoulder. And that's sort of the pressure of like proving them wrong. So there's that sort of variety of pleasure as well.
That's interesting, because sometimes that can be useful.
It can be. Yeah, you know. Absolutely can be. And the first few days of this person saying negative stuff, I was very ticked off. I was very angry. And as of our bike ride, Chelsea and I took a bike ride the other day, and I was talking to her, and I'm like, I can't wait to thank that person for being a total dick to me, because that basically has enabled me to be like, yeah, I'm gonna show you. And that's a good thing. You know, it's okay when you can reframe things.
So there's the first elephant in the room, which is you say, oh yeah, so all those things you listed all sound like there's a lot of responsibility, a lot of pressure, and not a lot of firm foundation in terms of I get a paycheck. You know, where all these things are conditional. And then you said, oh yeah, this morning I finished the painting. So all I do is talk to writers and creators. So it's that idea of, you know, I was among someone the other day, someone who's really awesome and wonderful. A couple of people actually I know like this, and they're going through a major home renovation. Mm. They're saying, oh, you know, they tell me all about what's going on. They say, so of course, right now I'm not writing. I'll get back to it in August. And yet here you have what you just did and what we're talking about before we really hit record is that you just moved and you're still kind of unpacking and arranging.
Yeah.
How do you find the mental space and the time space to create?
You know, that's interesting, and that's something that is probably its own conversation, but I've really been struggling with that, to be honest with you. I feel like if it wasn't my job, I feel like it would probably still be on the shelf. Mm. I feel like there's the pressure of both having to create because of the job aspect, then also, as I noted, just being an artist of any sort, you have this pressure of like constantly getting to the next level. You can never rest. You're always on that treadmill. I want to push my skills to the next level. I want to push everything constantly. So there is that pressure. I think both of us are at that age. Maybe I could speak for myself. We are the same age, but I feel like we are at the age where I'm also looking back on life a lot and looking horizontally to other of my peers and wondering, should I have gone a different path? Like, what was I better off when art was purely fun and pleasure and my escape, as opposed to like, got to push, blah, 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 blah. So I feel like some of that pressure can be good to get something done. It can be great to get you in the writer's chair or behind the easel. It's great to get you there, but it's not a great condition if you can't escape it while you're creating. So I find that I really try to compartmentalize those things. And once I sit in the chair that's behind me in front of my easel, I turn off everything else. All the noise gets turned off. But just getting to that place is really challenging.
It's funny, you mentioned because it's a job, you sort of have to show up to it. And it made me think, too, for even the things that are hobbies for me, like learning to play guitar or something like that, I get really structured with it. And I think that it's probably my way of making it a job, because I know if I don't make it a job, I won't show up to it because it's optional after that.
Sure.
So I thought that was kind of neat.
But there's like that implied, you know, pot of gold. There's a reason that you're doing it. Like, it's not necessarily just a job. It's the goal of someday, maybe, like for me with guitar, I do the same thing. I make it a job.
Yeah.
I have to do this. But it's also, for one day, I want to picture myself being good enough to fluently play whatever I want, however I want.
Totally. So it's interesting because I'm trying to keep in mind all those responsibilities. And I think if you go into the easel, and I don't know if this is a question or how you would answer this question, but is there, or how do you navigate the pressure to create paintings and art that when you go back through what has sold, whether it was private commission, whether it was what sold on a mug, was a company option for something, is there a pressure that you go through of saying, I got to provide for my family, I've got to have ROI on this, I don't know, like, that it affects that in some way?
Yeah, 100%. Are you kind of referring to, or does it dictate what I paint or how I paint? Or,
yeah.
Or, yeah, 100% does. And that's been a struggle for me lately. And I know a lot of artists and writers go through this. I feel like the way my art career sort of took off was that I painted my lifestyle, a lot of the things that I love. So I paint surfing and the ocean and a lot of things that I love to do or that I'm inspired by or that I find passion in. And I feel like over the past 5-6 years since becoming a dad, a lot of my time and a lot of my priorities have shifted, right? So I don't have time to just drop everything and go surfing. I don't have the luxury of doing a lot of the activities or things or the time to reflect like I used to. Like, it used to be more about it just was overflowing, you know, that feeling of inspiration was just always there. And it was just, of course I'll paint it. It's just overflowing. And now it's like a lot of that has been redirected towards my parenting. So in order to tap into that person I used to be able to be, or I used to be, has increasingly felt forced, which is not a great feeling to go into a painting. So what I've been trying to do is shift my paintings more towards staying on track with what I'm inspired by. So instead of painting maybe some of the activities per se, I'm trying to paint more the lifestyle. Like, so now I'm spending a lot more time going to the beach with my children and splashing around in, you know, a couple inches of water or something, more so than I have time to surf. So that's what I'm painting more, a lot of sunsets and very calm, relaxing, tranquil type things. So I'm trying to stay on track with what I know works, which is being authentic and painting what I know I connect with, as opposed to forcing it. But that said, a lot of that stuff still is what sells best. So I still do it. And when I force myself to do it, I still connect with it, but it's not, it doesn't always feel as easy of a gate to enter, let's say.
Yeah. There's a couple of ways that, I mean, I've talked to plenty of writers who are so open about saying, look, I write in a genre. I write what I know the audience wants. I pursue new genres based on that. I always love that openness, not because they're saying some dirty secret, but because they had such a joy in it. They were happy to do that. They believed in that. And the other way, I guess, I've heard other people talk about that is like, I've interviewed author illustrator Rebecca Green a couple of times, and she talked about that, where she's almost on this constant quest of finding quote unquote her style, which of course as the observer is, you know, almost absurd because she has such an amazing characteristic style. But like you, to her from the inside, she's always on that process of discovery. Right. She's always trying to make sure it is as authentic as possible. She's always growing. And you don't know from the inside of what, you know, a casual observer might see.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I feel like there's so many ways to approach art and of any sort, right? So there's the craftsman that knows how to whittle little things of wood. And they have all these tricks up their sleeve, and they were apprenticed, and they did all these great classes with their master, their apprentice, whatever it might be, and they know how to do this craft. And therefore, they crank out the craft because they know how to do it, and that's pretty much what they know, and that's what they do. And then there's more of the artist that's, I think, more connect, which I would like to think that I'm more connected with this next model, which is more the artist that almost has a shamanic type approach, where it's very spiritual. There's very much a connection, where there's very much a feeling of removing resistance so it can flow through you more freely, and so that you can contribute, and so you can serve and be a servant to the creativity. And so for artists and writers and musicians like that, it's never really good enough, because there's always more that you can give, and there's always more that you can take a step back and let it flow through. And artists that are always trying to like find their style, it's not that they're not happy with what they have, it's that they know they're capable of more. It's they're not just content with, I know how to pick up this brush and use these 7 colors and make the exact same picture of a squirrel that everyone wants to see, or whatever, or write this exact story, and I'm great at this genre, so I'm going to write this genre because everyone wants to read this genre. And that's craftsman type model, where you are great at your craft, is probably way smarter for business. People want to have that predictability. They want to know that if they pick up a Joe Schmo book, it's going to have this type of a plot. And even the same with bands. I remember with Metallica or Dave Matthews, once they shifted at all, their own fans were like, ah, screw you guys, you changed too much. Like,
yeah.
And that's a shame, because artists and writers, I don't think, should just stick to one thing. Otherwise, you know, a painter's, it should be more than just like a Photoshop filter. You shouldn't just click a shortcut on your keyboard to get the exact same result. Like, that's probably better for business, because clients and fans know what to expect, but it's just, ugh.
So, okay, so we've sort of outlined a lot of ways. There's the creative pressure, there's the family pressure, which we've, I mean, not even scratched the surface on. And then we have the fact that, and this is interesting too, because a lot of people I talk to, where if there's a couple, you know, maybe one is the more artistic, creative thing, and the other one has the stable job that has the health insurance. But you're in a situation where both of you, you know, operate outside of that, really. And I do think it's like, I mean, this is something I've experienced too, where I've been on my own for a decade, and you sort of operate so far outside of the realm of reality. Like, you know, for years before I had my private studio, I worked out of a Starbucks because I really liked the hubbub and I could really focus.
Right.
And I got to meet a lot of people, but you realize how many weird looks you get, or people like, what do you do? Like it was so difficult to imagine that you could just sit in a random table and somehow earn a living or create.
Right.
So in comes the topic of anxiety. How do you navigate that? And I'm actually really curious too, like individually, you know, when does anxiety come up and how does it come up? But then I think there's a whole other level, which is sort of, and I don't mean for you to speak to your wife or any for your wife, but like, sure, as a couple, because you both have these things that you're building, because you each believe in your mission individually, what you do. Mm-hmm. And then there's the money, and then there's the family, and then there's your relationship. It's like layer on top of layer, and it's all mixed in some way.
It's very, the short answer is it's really effing hard. That's the short answer. I was coaching an artist recently, and we were talking about something that sort of parallels this, and I was trying to explain that in order to have patience to paint a very large work. So I was giving her an example of one of my paintings is, I think, let's say 6 foot wide. It took me several months to complete. It has a lot of stuff going on. It's a seascape that probably has like 4 trillion little ripples in it. And I was trying to explain to her that if you look at the whole thing, it could look very overwhelming for an artist, that I'm going to paint something that complex, even to the point that if I saw the painting before I was about to start it, I might think like, do I really want to get into this? Is this really something I want to like commit to? And what I was explaining to her is that each session only commits to a certain thing. So this one session, I might only have an hour free. So for that hour, my only thing I need to focus on is this 2-inch section where I'm trying to get the foam on the white water just right. And so that little section then becomes sort of like a fractal, becomes its own composition. And that composition within a composition is sort of on a grid. So there's like 1,000 little mini paintings that just so happen to become one painting. And each one might be an abstract painting that's a very small section of the piece, and one section might be more detailed. And each one gives me a part of my personality, becomes fulfilled in it. So if a part of me needs more control, I might focus on a part of the painting that's more detail-oriented with little tiny dots or little tiny details, because part of my persona needs that. And there might be a part of me that just wants to crank gangster rap and just get real loose, and that's okay too. And so I think it's really important to honor each side of yourself for what it is. It's each part of yourself is a segment of the whole. And I think a lot of us, and myself included, sometimes forget that, and we look at the big picture. And when you look at the big picture, the human, there's so much going on, like you just described, for all of us, right? Yeah. And so if you're like, oh my God, I have to think of this and that, blah, 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 it gets so complicated. But if you're like, you know what? For this next hour, I'm going to spend time with my kids, and then an hour after that, I have to do some work. And, you know, breaking everything down to the mac to the micro, and the macro sort of gets taken care of by itself by making sure that...
Can you switch gears that easily, or how do you... I guess it's almost two things. It's one, how do you kind of switch the gears or plan for that? And then two, because I've got little kids at home as well, but not as many as you... is how do you set the expectation for other people? And even now, like, I was late on this call, and I'm like hyper aware that sort of like, I'm looking at you, you're in this big room behind you. That means there's four other people in that house that are somewhere else, you know? So it's like, there's this context that's always there of how you find the space to switch those gears.
So if you want to talk, like, I'll briefly talk about the technical side. I'm very anal, so I have like my Evernote and my Trello, and everything is very structured. So I do have that need for control and structure and prioritization and deadlines. And I've read every, you know, to-do, productive, get things done type book you can imagine. So I love that. That's a side of me. But I also try to prioritize based on priorities. So, and missions, you used the word mission before. I'm very mission driven. So an example of this call, you kept texting me, I'm running late. I'm like, okay, well, I have other things to take care of. So I was at the computer. What other things in the computer can I do? I can do this, I can do that, blah, blah, blah. As far as priorities go, I know that one of my priorities happens to be I need to get space to paint, to fulfill my orders, to do creative work. And so thankfully I have this nice studio, which is the basement. It's all mine. My wife Chelsea has an office upstairs. We have physical space, which is great. And then as far as the time and the emotional space, we both acknowledge and respect each other's needs to not only fulfill the work stuff, but also, like, this morning last night Chelsea was like, hey, there's an 8 o'clock in the morning yoga with our friend Brett, do you mind if I do it? Can you take care of the kids, you know, for the morning? Of course, no problem. I know that's a need that you have. Of course I honor that, because I know she will and does the same thing for me. So I feel like all of our priorities are sort of like a spoke in the wheel. It's not like the business is more important than the physical, and the physical is more important than the spiritual. It's all important. The family, everything is important. And we make sure that each thing is sort of tended to. I know Tony Robbins gave an example about the wheel, and using a wheel as an example, it has to be balanced, or else as you go down the road, it'll be like real lumpy and bumpy and uncomfortable. So we try to make sure that all parts of the wheel are in balance. And if one of them feels in balance, my wife and I will say to each other, you know, I haven't worked out in a few days. Can you, you know, watch the kids, or let's go on a run together?
I'm wondering, because both of you are so entrepreneurial and both of those things are mission driven, I actually wonder if it's easier than if one or both of you had a traditional job, because the nature of it feels like you always have to be aware of what the other one really cares about. And because both of your jobs are so fluid, you're always in negotiation. So one, you're more aware of what they care about. Two, you're always in the habit of communicating. I mean, a lot of people I talk to ask their spouse for, like, oh, I'd like a little time to go to the cafe to work on my novel. It's not a possibility for them in their mind to do that.
Yeah, that's
whatever reason.
Yeah, that's, again, I'm going to use the same analogy. There's the dynamic of the person, but then there's the dynamic of a couple, right? So Chelsea and I often tell, Chelsea and I will break things down like this. So if we have an issue or a problem or we're working on something, we very consciously will bring up the fact, like, is this a parenting problem or an issue, or is this something between a couple in a romantic sense, or is this a work thing, or is this a roommate issue? Like, is one of us pissed off the other person didn't do something? Like, again, people make everything into the whole, and a marriage is not just a marriage. It's actually lots of little compositions within one beautiful painting that just so happens from the outside world looks like Dan Blank's marriage. But on the reality, Dan Blank has married to a woman that they're also roommates. So there's roommate issues. Then there's parent issues. Then there's work issues. Then there's everything else has an issue. And so if a spouse or a loved one or a partner isn't willing to see that the other person has many, many needs, that's a problem within the marriage, not within the creativity complex.
So then how does anxiety kind of filter into this? And I mean, I guess the way I always think about it, for a lot of people, there's what you see on the surface, like, oh, just got done writing my new book and now whatever, like there's what we put out there. And sometimes like there's just the back of the head. It's the stuff we worry about. And I think the classic example is always most people I know don't really sleep that well. And often it's because they can't shut off because they're thinking about that thing they said 6 years ago that didn't come out right.
Right.
Or they're worrying about something. And sometimes it's really specific and meaningful. Sometimes your brain is just doing the worry thing to, as you said, try to control or protect. And I'll notice that too. There's things sometimes like all night, it's kind of in my brain. And I wake up and I may be like, well, it's not even an issue. But like my brain had to do that thing of worrying.
Right.
How does it manifest for you, or how would you frame the different ways that maybe you or someone in your position would worry if you've got to create, you've got to do the business, you've got to manage the family, all the stuff that you do?
Yeah. I mean, I've always had problems with anxiety, like tremendous, tremendous anxiety. So when we first met in high school, I was like a nervous wreck, and I feel like I've always been fairly good at sort of being stealth about it. But I there was so many times where I was in class and you might look at me and be like, oh, he's just sitting there. But like in my head was just complete chaos and complete unrest. There was never a comfortable moment. And it wasn't until college that I realized that wasn't normal. So I've always been very, very, very stressed to the point where, in my younger days, I would be sitting on a lounge chair in the beach and look as relaxed as possible, but it was my blood was boiling inside. So I've always had tremendous, tremendous anxiety, panic attacks, all that, you name it. So I know that very, very well. And yes, I definitely still struggle with it. I feel like I have a lot of tools in place that really help me keep it in check. And as far as my tools go, my routine, I feel like when I stay on my routine, I can sort of manage really well. My routine usually has a number of components. So I try my best to wake up before everyone else, which I almost always do. I'm always awake first. And I do generally 20 minutes of meditation a day, which I really find keeps that monkey mind sort of in check. I'm sort of more aware. It gives me more awareness of what my mind is doing instead of letting me run away with the momentum of the thoughts. In addition to that,
I want to pause that for a second because meditation is something I've heard a lot.
You don't meditate?
Huh?
You do not meditate?
I don't, but I've heard a lot of people, mention different podcasts, comes up a lot, like Tim Ferriss podcast and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And it's interesting because there's a couple of things I always think of, which is, everyone, for the most part, seems to have a challenge with it because it's hard to just sit there and do the process. And I think a lot of people don't understand that it's challenging for most people. The other thing, too, is like I'm imagining like I'm an early riser naturally. And it's like I imagine you wake up, all the responsibilities. The house is probably one of the few hours out of the day your house is quiet.
It's great. I love it.
And it's interesting, too. like this is the negative way to frame it. Okay. That instead of you being like, oh, I'm going to work on that painting, or I'm going to get the dishes done, or I'm going to get to email when no one's bugging me, you say, I'm going to sit here and do nothing. 20 right. minutes. Mm-hmm. Is yep. there a transaction like that? I mean, obviously the opposite is true, is that this is precious needed time, but are you able to prioritize that all the time, or is even that a bit of a battle?
Not anymore. It used to be. I don't think anyone is necessarily good at meditating at first, which I feel like is way more reason that you should be meditating. Like, and it's the same as when you go running, almost no one has patience or an ability to run far at first. It really stinks. And so the fact that you can't meditate is more reason that you need to meditate, because what's happening is as you're meditating, your mind is going and your mind is telling you like, this is boring, I'm too fidgety, I have too much to do. Or there's the physical sensation of like, I know you're supposed to be deep breathing and whatnot, but I feel like I can't do it. And I feel like in a hurry, like, is this over yet? Come on. Like looking at my watch, like, and so that is exactly what you're trying to work yourself out of. And so now I can literally, if I had the time, if my kids let me, I could literally meditate for hours if I had to or wanted to.
Wow.
And I would never feel like, oh, is this over yet? And so I feel the benefits not only with my creativity, but also with my anxiety and with the racing thoughts. Like even right now, I get sort of a anxiety, you know, talking in public or talking on a podcast. Like even with my own podcast, like you could ask my wife someday. And before each one, I was like almost going into like a panic mode, which is more reason than I did it. So I sort of push myself to do things, but in my head, I'm like connecting with the meditative energy that I sort of the channels that I've sort of developed, and you can sort of be a witness to what's going on as opposed to letting it take over. Oh, and there's a big difference between having that monkey mind and then watching it transpire almost like a movie, as opposed to it becoming that crazy chaotic mind.
You know, can I ask something in this? I don't know if this is a dumb question, but I really am genuinely curious. Like, yeah, yeah. I hear the phrase monkey mind and lizard brain, and I mean, I get what it means. And then part of me is also thinking of the opposite, which is the justification for it, which is like, hey, I can't, and not to pick on meditation or anything, like,
yeah,
I'm nervous because I got to earn a living, and it's important I earn a living, and my parents broke their backs earning, like, where right. we can justify the monkey mind, that kind of very reactive thing. But it's like, I'm also wondering if I just don't understand the phrase well enough either.
So I think that people use those kinds of phrases just to sort of simplify it as like a primitive pattern that all of our minds get into, where it just kind of runs away with itself with zero control.
Got it.
I feel like it has so many benefits. But for me as a painter, and a writer is a great example also. To be a good writer or a painter, if you don't have patience, you're screwed, right? Unless you're writing like 5-minute poems, or unless you're like doing a 3-minute painting just to see how you show everyone how fast you can do it, you generally need patience.
Yeah.
Even if it's not with the process, it's with the release, it's with the marketing, it's yeah. with the patience that it requires to hear and process criticisms, whether it's external or internal. Mm-hmm. And so meditation lets you sort of slow things down before the reaction kicks in, before the fight or flight kicks in, before the survival part of your mind goes in, before the panic kicks in. There's sort of a space, right? It's like what Stephen Covey said, between stimuli and response is a space. And in that space is your, I forgot the exact quote, but is your power or something or other. But meditation allows you to see what's going on almost as if it's not necessarily it's not necessarily who you are. So when we say to someone, I'm really stressed out, I'm really blah, 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 I have to do this, I have to do that, that is the persona, if you could think of it as a separate entity within you, that is now writing. So that crazy person that's stressed is doing your writing for you. Or that stressed out person is the one painting. And how good do you think they're going to do with that job? The person that you want to be doing the creative work, the person you want to be doing the higher level skills, is the person that's calm and collected and someone that's in charge of their own thoughts. And that person within you, I feel like can be tapped into more so if you're not stressed out, if you're more watching things happen. And it doesn't mean you have to be all chill and relaxed and like, you know, zoned out in a waterfall. You might be in a competitive situation. You might be in a sports situation. It's about tapping into that space where you're more present. And as a parent and as an artist or a writer, you have to be present if you want to succeed and be sort of just be, really.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that too, because, you know, surrounding your art and, as you mentioned before, the lifestyle, it's like you, and this is again an outside observer, like, you know, you have been deeply involved in the surf culture and the music culture and all the things you're talking about. And that's a culture that really exudes this sort of, as you said, like that sense of chillness. And it's neat to kind of talk about this also in that context of knowing that, like, well, yeah, that is, you know, part of who you are, and your experience is also like the anxiety and the entrepreneurship and the family, where right. It's not all one thing or another.
It's like with yoga. So my wife and I love yoga, and there's, I think, at least two different kinds of people that do yoga. I think people look at people that do yoga as the ones that kind of float through like flower fields and have like, you know, they like burp sparkles, you know, like just like, oh, I'm so chill. Like, but most people I know that do yoga or surf for that matter are like, they do it because they need it. It's a tool. So a lot of people that I know that surf or skate or do these hardcore activities, they do it because that's the only way they know how to tap into that presence. It's that flow state. They're not doing it because they're like these super chill, laid back people. I think that's more of a result of prioritizing these sorts of meditative activities.
All right, so I'd interrupted you that your first tool is meditation.
It's a great topic. You should definitely do it. A great way to get into it is the Sam Harris app, honestly. I've used many apps, and his is one of the better ones to sort of teach you it. Okay. I don't need it anymore, but it definitely helps you sort of like understand. He's more of a teacher.
Okay.
Yeah. So meditation has helped me tremendously with my creativity, with being a parent, and just keeping my anxiety in check, because it's brutal. When it gets out of check, I'm like, oh my God, I forgot how bad this feels. Along those same lines, I guess on a more biological chemical approach, I eat extremely clean. As you know, I'm a vegan, but I also gave up caffeine a number of years ago, which I found was really spiking my resting heart rate quite a bit.
You've just annoyed every one of my listeners, by the way, by saying that.
You know what? I converted one of everyone listening. I was on the 8 espresso Starbucks trip, you know, per day. I was chugging pots of coffee, and I was literally at Starbucks.
That's when you and I first reconnected, because we, as you mentioned, we went to high school together. It was a long break, and then we reconnected after a couple decades, and I went down to your house at the time and got in your Jeep, went to Starbucks, and like, I mean, you're a high energy person too, but that was, and I think it was a few months after that when you gave it up, and that was quite a number of years ago.
Yeah, so it's not like I'm, you know, trying to be all, you know, high and mighty. Just for me, it was really messing with my anxiety. It was really screwing me up, and I was starting to keep track of my heart rate. And at one point, my resting heart rate was between 80 and like 95, which is like really high.
Oh, wow.
Now my resting heart rate's like 52 to 53.
Wow.
And I don't exercise more. I actually exercise less nowadays. So I really feel like that's attributed to it. And when you're resting and your heart is just rocking, it doesn't feel good when you're just sitting there trying to relax and your heart's like, bum, 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 bum. So that's one of the things I've done that really kind of chills me out, is just kind of being more cleanly living.
You know what's interesting about that? I think a lot of us justify what in the end is a bad habit. I mean, most people I don't think would call coffee that. But it's the idea that it could be that easy justification, which is like, hey, I'm an artist, I'm a skater, I'm a surfer. You know, the caffeine gives me that fuel because I live an amped up lifestyle. And, you know, like you can really make it a part of that. And it's like, yep, there are these signals that you were smart enough to tap into, like the heart rate is saying, let me measure my heart rate. Oh,
Dan,
that's not good.
Dude, I mean, what you're saying is so true. I mean, it wasn't just caffeine. I mean, for a lot of years, I was like really into drugs, partying my brains out, like way longer than I should have been, like way longer. And so, yeah, as an artist, you lean on all of those crutches, and you fool yourself into thinking, if I don't do this, this, and this, maybe even in this order, that I can't paint like I used to, or that I want to. You can't feel, you know, you can't feel a certain way unless you do these things. And then if you do those things and all of a sudden it works, then you unlock the potential of my painting and blah, blah, blah. And like, when I gave up caffeine, I also more or less gave up drinking. Like, I haven't really been drunk in like years. And it all happened when my wife got pregnant. And it was sort of like how you described guitar as a job. Like, this implied discipline that I know we both like. It was sort of one of those self-imposed missions where I was like, can I do this? And like, then it got to the point where like, I better be able to do this because I'm in control of my life, because I'm a control freak. And so I wanted to see what it would be like to try to tap into that stuff without all those crutches. And so that's sort of how it kind of started, is like this mission that I gave myself for no apparent reason.
Well, I like that too. I mean, it also, it's funny because, you know, I intentionally tried to start the podcast describing all the things you're responsible for, because there's a really easy narrative of life is so crazy. There's so much responsibility. And what I like about the way you talk about this is the idea of being intentional. So you saying all the other reasons instead about giving up coffee, but that idea of saying like, and I'm putting this on, these aren't your words, but like, about to be a father, about to have a family, you know, let me be intentional about how that role and how I'm going to be able to show up to that role. And it's interesting that you might have attached drinking or coffee to that too, which I think a lot of people wouldn't really attach to that idea of that new role.
I would never judge anyone. I'm just saying, for me, I took drugs way too extreme. And even after I got out of the harder stuff, when I was just smoking a lot, it got to the point where I was about to be a dad. And I'm like, you know, I really want to be coherent. I really want to be sharp. I really want to be on my A game for my child and as a parent. And I don't want to dilute that experience. And so that's kind of how it started. And then it got, you know, deeper and deeper as far as eating healthier and healthier and giving up things that were becoming more apparent to me as they were crutches. And so the idea of connecting deeper to my art, connecting deeper to my marriage and to my children, and connecting more deeply to that feeling of inspiration that's flowing through me without the layers and filters of fogginess of stuff in my system that doesn't necessarily belong there. And don't get me wrong, I'll still take a couple hits and paint, and it's awesome. I'll still have like a quarter glass of wine or whatever. But for me, I really also have found a discipline and a pleasure in connecting to that through meditation and yoga and other means, just as another tool in my tool belt. It's not like I'm only doing it that way, but I feel like it is important to connect as intentionally and purely as you can for me.
Yeah, it's interesting because I see the other side too, which is like, with all these additional pressures, you know, quote unquote, it must be difficult to exert as much control because you don't have any time to think or to do. And I like how that intentionality is like, well, no, we have to take the time to create this well-rounded vegan meal, because without that foundation, how could I live up to this, you know, these different roles that you have?
Yeah, I think that connects to morality. And I think that when people make decisions based on morality and make decisions based on a part of them that is not negotiable, then there's not going to be, there is no feeling of sacrifice. There is no feeling of effort per se. Like, any of the things I'm describing that describe my lifestyle, someone else might look at it as like, that's too hard, or that's too blah, 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 or that's too challenging, or that's too time consuming. And like, for me, it's just based on my moral compass is pointed to a certain way. And so there is no other option. It's like being a vegan. You go to a restaurant, and if there's only three things on the menu, nowadays it's not like that. But when I first became a vegan, it was like, you're lucky to find one thing on the menu. And that just eliminates a lot of junk that I don't want. So for me, it's not about difficulty or challenge or intention or effort per se or anything like that. It's just, this is what I want, and that's everything else I don't want. And it's that simple.
So when you run a business like this, I always feel like there's an unlimited number of possible, very realistic worries. And especially now, because everyone's experiencing, it's not just the horrible tragedy and all that.
Sure.
Is that we're in a whole new era of uncertainty. And there's all kinds of ways to approach that. But, you know, with a business, it's like that quote I started with the guy who ran the music shop. That idea of, like, you always feel like it's all on the line and you're having to, like, put risk with that. This makes sense from a very awesome, stable, foundational level. How do you deal with the idea of, like, the little anxieties? And that could be almost anything from jealousy of other painters on Instagram to, oh, I launched this thing, it didn't do as well as I wanted it to. Or, I mean, I don't know what. I mean, just everyday money concerns, I think, are a huge part of a lifestyle like this as well.
Oh boy, which of those to unpack first? So, as far as the comparison thing, I mean, I'm not, you know, immune to that. And there's plenty of times I'll be flipping through social media and be like, oh my God, that guy's better than me. That guy kicks my ass. This chick is doing so much better at such and such. I get all of that. But then I sort of go back to the mission of, like, it's not my job to be them, and it's not my business what they're doing per se. I try to shift it into, if I feel jealousy or comparison, I try, and in quotes, I'm really trying, because it is an effort, to shift that towards motivation to get better, or to sometimes I catch myself being almost thanking the person, showing gratitude. Thank you for making me aware of this side of myself that I really have to work on. And so I try to shift the dialogue into something that's going to help me. And of course, I have bad days where it doesn't work. So it's not like I'm some kind of guru. But when I'm on a better day, I try to shift things towards a dialogue that suits me and serves me better. As far as the money stuff, that is very challenging. I mean, it's you just, again, have to stay on the mission. I'm trying to earn money for my family, and I try to focus on that. I'm trying to diversify my work in a way where I don't feel like I'm sacrificing my fulfillment. So I feel like it's very important to kind of realize what you want out of each thing that you do. And again, intention. If I'm going to do something or put my time towards something, it better either really fulfill me and or make me money, it better make the world a better place. It better do something. I don't want to just waste my time.
So that's the thing. I mean, I notice this a lot because I'm online a lot, is there can be a perception with a lot of people who create or have a business where it's, you know, oh, you know, you create the marketing funnel or you diversify your product portfolio or whatever like that. And I always feel like it's always good advice. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
But the reality for a working entrepreneur of any sort, it's always a lot more complex than that. It's rarely a formula. It's rarely, oh, we took, you know, you mentioned some of these people like Stephen Covey or whatever. We're like, we took their advice, we applied it. Now I don't worry about that anymore. You know, it's always a lot more challenging.
Yeah, it really is. The whole blogosphere thing, there is a lot of advice out there, too much. And there is a lot of, like, recipes, and there's a lot of formula-driven stuff. Like, follow these 15 steps and you too will blah, blah, blah. And that is a challenge. That is definitely a challenge to sort of make sense and where you fit in all that. I think it's important to sort of just focus your actions towards things that are going to make you happy, are going to make you money, you're going to provide for your family. And I feel like times like this really lets you focus on who and what is important, right? So, and the more desperate you become, the more you really value whatever time and effort you have has to be pointed at something that is going to make sense.
Yeah, it's funny too, because I feel like you mentioned this a little bit before, I think, but that idea of, you know, always thinking about, like, are you doing the right things? Have you taken the right strategy? And you mentioned in terms of, you know, being at a point in life where it's possible to look around and say, you know, did I make the right decisions? Am I working on the right thing? And I've looked at that too, where, like, you know, I'm 10 years into this company and now decades into the career. You can look at, I mean, you can always look around and see the person that started it with you, and they are, let's say, further, quote unquote, by some metric. Mm-hmm. The person started later than you and is further by some metric. And then you ignore the people who maybe flamed out.
Right.
Yep. Is there a way to think about that too? Because that can be a real, like that idea of you having the mission and having the structure, but sometimes you just don't know. Like you just sort of don't know what you should be focusing on. And I imagine for a working artist, there can be that idea of like, oh, private commissions pay this, or brand sponsorships, or, you know, Etsy and Patreon, or, you know, whatever, that you're always having to decide in some way. And sometimes it's not a mission-driven decision. It's like just a
pragmatic decision of what works, what doesn't.
How have you navigated and circled around that? Because I feel like that's another thing too. And I think I've gone through this, a lot of people where you're constantly circling the same decision. You're on year nine of circling the same decision in some way, shape, or form. I mean, it goes back to your example of Patreon, which is like, oh, 2.5 years ago, it was on the to-do list and you finally got around to it.
Because there are a lot of options, right? Like you said, you can go down any of these paths and find examples of people that are sort of, you know, facsimiles of what you're doing in a different, so one guy's doing it through YouTube, one guy's doing it through this way, blah, blah, blah. I feel like it's probably the similar advice that you give to a writer trying to find their style, or an artist trying to find their style, is that how do you find a style other than by trying lots of things, pulling out what feels right to you, and dismissing everything else? And I feel like a lot of the business model decisions that we're sort of jumping into now, these which direction do I go in, it's like, for me at least, try everything, right? Try different things, try things that work. Like I tried a podcast, I got some great things out of it, it was awesome, I still might continue it in some level. And I'm trying Patreon, I'm switching my business model a little bit with my online store. Like, you try, see what makes sense. Try things that feel good. Try things that seem to have potential. Don't not try things because they seem hard. You know, like I think a lot of people think, I'm not going to do that because it's too hard, whether it's meditation or whether it's a certain particular platform or whatever it might be. I feel like there is no one business model that you can just get an ebook on that all of a sudden now it works for you. There's so many artists I know that have completely different business models. You have to really just kind of observe and look and learn and model after other people certain parts of it. Try it on for size. If it doesn't feel like you, why doesn't it feel like me? Maybe there's a reason for it. Maybe it's an internal block. Maybe it's perfect for you, but you're blocking yourself from seeing that it's perfect for you. You know, there's so many aspects to it, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is true for me, and I feel like I observe this in your career too, which is, as an outsider, someone who wants to become, you know, an artist, a writer, there's a perception of doing the work to get to a level and making it. And I don't mean making it like you're this international success. But then when I look at my career, I talk to you about yours or a lot of other people I know, it's this idea that you, in some ways, always feel like you're back at square one or experimenting wildly or being like, am I good? Like, you know, am I,
right.
Am I like growing with this? Like, I think I am, but you know, that sort of thing where it's this cyclical thing where in some ways you always feel like you're 22 and just starting out. In other ways, you feel like, gosh, it's been quite a long time too.
Yeah, but you know, if you have the option of feeling like you're 22 and starting out, like you could also embrace that and be like, yeah dude, I'm 22 and starting out. Like, I feel like what's unfortunate with a lot of artists and writers and musicians is that we fall in love with our craft because there's a sort of magic there, right? We do it because we love it. And then we get to the point, it's the same with like your favorite meal. Like you might say, I might say, I love Chinese food. And then you have it all the time. And then all of a sudden you open a Chinese restaurant and then you rely on having to sell Chinese food. And then you forget that, oh yeah, I used to really love this. And artists and writers and musicians, we forget that like you're doing this because, oh yeah, you really love to do it. And instead of focusing on like, oh my God, I get to do this and I love doing this, you're like, how can I make more money? Or like, what can I do to get more attention? Instead of being like, I just like to do this. And it's like Elizabeth Gilbert said in her book, she said something like, for the love of God, don't put that much pressure on your art to make a living from it. I'm paraphrasing, but it was just a great, great line. And we put so much pressure, like who's to say you have to make a living from it? And if you do make a living from it, who's to say you have to do it a certain way? Mm-hmm. And but no matter what you do, whether you're making a living or you're struggling or whatever, or whether you don't care if you make a living, like, don't lose touch with like the purpose that you are doing it in the first place. Like with parenting, it's easy to get in the moment. Your kids trigger you and they push your buttons, and then it's easy to forget how you felt before, when your child was in your wife's womb, when it was like, oh my God, this is my baby, and touching her tummy and seeing the kicks. And being like, what am I going to be like as a dad? And what are you going to be like as a mom? And like imagining those beautiful things. Then your baby's born and you're like, you know, changing the diapers. And you're so patient and so present, hopefully. And then, you know, they become toddlers and they're like, no. And they start mouthing off to you. And it's easy to forget like what that once felt like. And it's supposed to feel like that more often than not, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. What kind of parent will I be? Triggered all the time. Is there anything that I haven't asked about around? I mean, we've covered a lot of topics, but just that idea of responsibility, anxiety, and creativity. Is there anything I haven't asked about that you feel we should talk about?
Oh, Lord. You know what? I think just I think it's important for artists, especially because most artists I know are very over analytical. And I feel like it's important to give yourself space and to really kind of zoom out of the macro, zoom out of the big picture. Like when I'm painting, I'll stand back like 15 feet. And a lot of times I'll even look at the painting with a mirror because I need a completely different view. I need to remind myself what this painting looks like. And it's so easy to be up close to a painting and I'm only focused on that 1 or 2 inch section this whole time. That's all I see is how this is wrong. And when I step back, it like sort of becomes a painting again. I remember again what it's about. And a lot of times I'll look at it in a mirror because it's like, oh yeah, when you flip it around the other way, things that you didn't notice, all of a sudden you notice. And I think we need to do that with our own life. Take a step back because we get lost in the details. We get lost in like, I didn't eat well for this one meal, or I didn't work on my Patreon or my YouTube today, or I skipped writing for 4 days and oh my God, I'm never going to make it. Like it's easy to get lost on that. But then when you zoom out, you walk back or you look at your life through a mirror, things start to make sense. And I think we have to sort of give ourselves permission to not be perfect and to see things from a different light.
I love that. Thank you so much for everything you shared. It really means a lot to me. I just love the advice.
It's great to have a chance to talk to a human.
You can find Jay Alders at jalders.com. That is A-L-D-E-R-S. On Instagram, he is, of course, at Jay Alders. We also mentioned his wife quite a number of times in her work, and you can find her on Instagram at Chelsea Alders, and her doula business is called Om Mamas Doulas. O-M, and then the word mamas, and then doulas. Well worth checking out. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me at wegrowmedia.com, and you can find me on social media at Dan Blank. Thank you so much for listening until the end.